I'd like to call the meeting of the Higher Education Finance Committee to order. We do have a quorum, and we would like to entertain a motion at this time to approve the minutes of our last meeting from January the 10th.
I move to approve the minutes.
Senator Erdahl makes the motion to approve the minutes. Any questions, corrections, or additions? If none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, and the minutes are approved. Our meeting today is going to consist of an overview of the Minnesota State Colleges and University System. And we're very pleased to see the Chancellor here today and look forward to your testimony and others that are going to join you. So at this time, I guess I would request that you introduce yourself for the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Nornis and committee members, for this opportunity to appear before you today. I'm Jim McCormick, Chancellor of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And I would like to introduce several people in the audience who will be assisting with this presentation today. First is Bob Hoffman, the Chair of our Board of Trustees, a Vice President at Taylor Corporation in Mankato. Trustee Clarence Hightower, Chair of the Board's Finance and Facilities Committee, who is also President and Chief Executive Officer of the Minneapolis Urban League. Ann Wyatt, the President of Anoka Technical College, and Ken Peters, President of Minnesota State University, a State College and Technical College. Ken, I know you have great things in mind, but not yet. These two individuals, Ken last year and Ann this year, are co-chaired with me in the Leadership Council. They'd like to say a word. We also have some other colleagues here, Pat Johns from Anoka Ramsey, Cheryl Frank from Finger Hills Community College, Kathy Nelson from Lake Superior College, Wilson Bradshaw from Metropolitan State University, Phil Davis from Minneapolis Community and Technical College, we have from Northland, Community Technical College, Orly Gunderson, and from St. Paul College, Donovan Swichtenberg, and of course the board members. So thanks to all of you for coming and being supportive, and others as well. I do need to introduce, and she'll be featured later, is the Vice Chancellor Laura King, and she'll be presenting some of the budget portion as we get to that point, Laura. Glad you're here. Now, when I came to Minnesota 4 years ago, I had set a goal to visit all 201 legislators in their home districts. And I'm really glad that I did that. Seeing a number of you here again and have over the years. That not only provided me with a wonderful overview of the state, but it also helped me understand your expectations for our system and how you think we could do a better job. And looking over the group, I kind of remember Jerry made sure that I was going to take care of maintenance, Representative Denson. We talked about taking care of the state's property. I can go around and remember many of those conversations. I had the privilege of meeting with you and talking with you more about the system. I appreciated that. I appreciate the relationships and hope that we can continue that on an individual basis as well as today. I'd like to give you an overview of the system and present our 2006-2007 budget request, Mr. Chair, which I think is what you want us to do, kind of a double introducing people in the system, also the budget. We are the largest provider of higher education in the state, serving 370,000 students each year in credit and non-credit courses. More than 80% of our graduates, I think that's
Mr. Chairman,
important.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dempsey.
With that, could we move the chair a little bit so we can see totally the presentation that's being made?
Good point.
Thank you.
Okay. Chancellor?
Thank you. More than 80% of our graduates stay in Minnesota to work or continue their education. I think this is an important thing when we talk about investment. These are the women and men that stay here to keep Minnesota great and make it that way. We strongly believe that part of our mission is meeting the needs of the state of Minnesota. And we do that by educating the people who make Minnesota work. The business owners and teachers, the nurses and carpenters, the journalists, the lab technicians, the city managers, the police officers, and more. We educate more than half of the state's new teaching graduates, 78% of the new nursing graduates, 92% of the law enforcement officers, 49% of the new business graduates, and 91% of the new construction trades graduates. Every year we also provide training to 9,000 first responders, those first on the scene of an emergency or disaster. Of our 32 colleges and universities, and I know that you generally know this, but seven are state universities, providing bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, and professional certificates. Eight are technical colleges, two-year colleges offering programs leading directly to employment. Five are community colleges offering programs designed to transfer to four-year colleges or universities and providing occupational programs. 11 are combined community and technical colleges offering technical and community college programs. One, Fond du Lac in Cloquet, is a tribal and community college, a land-grant institution that is the only combined tribal college and state community college, we believe, in the United States. Our colleges and universities are located throughout the state. We have 53 campuses located in 46 Minnesota communities. Our enrollment picture is healthy. Each year, we serve 240,000 students in credit-based courses and an additional 130,000 in non-credit courses. Last year, we graduated 32,000 students from our programs. About 43% of our students are part-time, meaning that they take fewer than 12 credits per semester. When you translate our headcount enrollment, which means simply the number of students served, into the equivalent of full-time students, our enrollment is about 136,500 for the current year. This is the sixth consecutive year of growth, and you, as you can see on the chart on slide 7, our enrollment has grown, and we'll come back to this more, our enrollment has grown 28% since the fall of 1998 and 8% in the past 3 years. Now, since Minnesota became a state, it has placed high value on public education. However, today I would like to talk for a moment about what I see and I feel as a very disturbing trend: the erosion of the understanding once widely held that higher education is a public good, a good that benefits everyone, not just the people who participate in it. At a time when more and more students have been coming through our doors, state spending per student has been dropping. In actual dollars, spending has declined from $5,148 per student in 1999 to $4,002 in 2005. We are serving more and more students with fewer and fewer state dollars. For the past four consecutive years, our students have had to cope with double-digit tuition increases, a nearly 60% increase since the fall of 2000. Over the same period, our state appropriation per student has slipped by 18%. The combination means that the burden of paying for college is falling increasingly on the shoulders of our students and their families. Indeed, just 6 years ago, the legislative appropriation supported nearly two-thirds of the cost of college. Today, it supports about half, and students and their families have had to make up the difference. The pioneers who settled this great state knew of the importance of public, affordable higher education to the society at large. Shortly after gaining statehood, they established a school to educate teachers, which eventually became Winona State University, the oldest of the Minnesota state colleges and universities. They knew that education was the key to a successful society. But today, I am fearful that this belief in the public good of higher education is being abandoned. It would be foolhardy to think that higher education is mostly a private good, benefiting only those who go to college, and that therefore students and their families should pay for most of it. Making it more difficult for students to attend college is not the direction, at least in my opinion, that this state or this nation should be going. And I sincerely hope that we, you, can find a way to help reverse this trend. I've been asked by a number of people to talk about the impact the budget cuts have had. These last 2 years have not been easy. An unprecedented $191.5 million cut in our base budget 2 years ago and the lack of a bonding bill have forced us to make some very tough choices. We've been forced to delay repair and replacement projects. Inflation on construction costs has added about $17.6 million to the cost of these projects. Substandard roofs that were scheduled to be replaced have continued to leak. The Sauvie Range Community and Technical College was forced to spend $10,000 to repair a roof at the Virginia campus, and were concerned that the repair might not hold through the snowy winter, requiring additional repairs. St. Paul College was forced to spend $500,000 on the replacement of a leaking, deteriorating, actively shrinking roof on what consultants have described as a tarp with rocks. This money was not budgeted and took funds needed for other repairs at the college, and no other repairs can be made at the college without going into emergency fund balance readjustments. Hibbing Community College has a 40-year-old failing underground hot water heating pipe system. A pipe burst in the winter of 2003 and was repaired. If that repair does not hold through the second winter, it means there will be no heat in the building. They would have to do what they did the last time when the heat went out, and that's make emergency repairs, thaw the ground to correct the burst pipe, bring in space heaters, pay a staff to be on the premises 24 hours a day, and that cost over $50,000. Our top two capital projects: renovating the old science buildings at Winona State University and Minnesota State University Moorhead have had to be put on hold, disadvantaging students and faculty on those two campuses. Both universities had planned to remodel their obsolete science labs into new classroom space. Without a bonding bill, these old buildings are sitting underutilized. You can't teach a math class very well in an old science lab. The cuts in our base budget and the resulting tuition increases have really had a serious impact on our students. Students are telling us that they have had to postpone their education because they can't afford it. They are taking second or third jobs to be able to pay the tuition. Many are reducing their class loads because of the cost, thereby prolonging the time it will take for them to reach their goal. We have just completed a study that showed that over the past 2 years, 30% more of our students have taken out loans to help pay for college, and their total borrowing rose by 60%. It's heartbreaking to hear these students talk about expecting to graduate after 4 years owing $25,000 or more in student loans. The board had hearings for, I believe, two afternoons a few months ago, and as you listen to the students tell their stories, it had a major impact on me, at least, and I think others who heard that. But the impact on our students goes even beyond tuition increases. I can tell you about the diminished student services, the delays in maintenance, the waiting list for popular programs, and more. We could have more nurses if we had the resources at Inver Hills. The students are there. We just don't have the faculty and the ability to do it. Just another example, after years of enrollment growth, one of our community colleges now has 9,000 students. That college has 11 counselors and academic advisors, the same number it had when the college was 5,500. And the kinds of students that we're serving need the support, the counseling services, and the help in order to get started and to be able to move forward and graduate, get a job, or transfer. Much of the impact I've talked about is tangible and concrete. But what I'm most concerned about are what we can't see and measure: the cost of missed opportunities. How many young people have been discouraged from even considering college because they think they can never afford it? How many futures have been compromised or dreams destroyed? And all of that means a loss to the future of the state. I think this is the real pain of the past 2 years. Now I want to tell you about the students who attend our colleges and universities for a moment. They're becoming more and more ethnically and racially diverse. The number of students of color at the state colleges and universities has grown 66% over the last 6 years. And in 2004, about 12.8% of our student body were students of color. Our students are diverse in other ways as well. The average age of our students is about 26 and a half. Many of our students are older and have jobs and families to support. About 45% are male, 55% female, and about a third are from families where neither parent attended college. Despite our recent funding problems, we have made significant strides over the last 2 years. In 2004, the federally recognized accreditation body for the North Central States granted the authority to accredit our own online programs. We are one of only a few college and university systems in the country that are granted that authority. It's only a few years I was here with you and you're asking us, when can we get e-learning going? When can we move this program? Last year, more than 25,000 students took online courses, a 13-fold increase since 2000. Through Minnesota Online, the state college and universities now offer more than 80 programs, completely or predominantly online, and 3,500 course sections. Now, over the past 2 years, we have created, you talk about bold changes, and we have a hard time explaining how we changed. I just thought I'd give you this example. Over the past 2 years, we've created 527 new programs. Two of them, biomedical equipment technology, network security information systems. Two of those new 527. We redesigned 1,400 programs. Examples of that would be auto production and digital imaging, computer integrated machining, and cardiopulmonary rehabilitation. Programs we redesigned to meet the current needs. And yes, we suspended 603 programs. A certified auto body repair program and a BS in hip re-education. You can see, and I give the presidents and the faculty the credit here. I give them the credit. You can see we are a dynamic system, changing to be responsive to the needs of the students and the needs of Minnesota. Our strength of the system and what really differentiates us from all other higher education providers in the state is our commitment, and I underline this, I think this is one reason we were created, our commitment to providing access. We provide access to higher education opportunities to more Minnesotans than anyone else. We provide our students with more choices, better value, and unlimited possibilities. We provide customized job training services to more employers than anybody else. 6,000 employers each year throughout the state training 141,000 employees. Just as involved in a grant for the Ford Motor Company, joint between the United Automotive Workers Ford Motor Company, St. Paul College, where we're going to be training them to keep that company viable and hopefully keep it here in Minnesota. We build communities across the state, I think, better than anybody else.
Mr. Chair.
For those of you who are new to the committee, I will say just a few words about our history. The Minnesota State College and University System was created 10 years ago. It was a historic and, I know, difficult merger.
Councilor McCormick?
Yes.
Can I interrupt for just one moment? We have a question from Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, Chancellor McCormick, you created 527 new programs, and you had said that there was a problem with existing programs. For instance, nursing, I know at least one of our campuses, we have over 100 nurses that would like to get into the program but cannot because there simply isn't enough of a resource. Can you explain how you're creating new programs simultaneously with not expanding programs that we know we have a backlog?
Some of the new Representative Pawlowski, some of those programs would be in the allied fields, and they would be created out of the closing. Out of the closing of programs, modifications. My point is that we're being dynamic, but not nearly enough expanding of programs and new programs. I mean, I would want to say that we could do more, so much more that's needed. And the nursing program is an outstanding example. 3,000 shortage, and we have the capacity, if we just had the resources, to do more. But these other programs, some of them probably were allied health. In fact, I could give you some statistics, I don't have them now, where we've increased a lot of nursing programs already in the current difficult environment. Just the change, but there is more to do. I would like to try to answer that better if I could, sir.
Well, Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, Chancellor McCormick, as we move forward here, we have a few months. It would be interesting to see how that occurred, that we have programs, we know there is a desperate need, and yet they were not expanded anywhere near to meet the need, and yet we have new programs being created. And my follow-up would be, where are the resources that you use, considering the historic base sets of 2003, to create the new programs? I assume it's tuition, but it would be very interesting to see how the tuition was increased on which campuses and where to do it.
Councilor McCormick.
Laura King has done some research while you're there, maybe she can just really be specific, Mr. Chair.
Okay, would you slide the microphone over to King?
Good evening, Mr. Chair. My name is Laura King. I'm the Vice Chancellor of the Minnesota State College and University. To the first half of your question, I would refer you to page 4 of the materials that we provided you today. And you'll see down at the bottom of that page some statistics about allied health often, particularly at our colleges and universities. 89% of our colleges in 2005 were offering RN and LPN programs, and 95% were offering non-nursing health-related programs. So I think to your first question, we have a capacity issue both from a resource standpoint and an instructor standpoint. To your question as to how is it we expand some and not others, I would ask you to give us an opportunity to think about that answer for you, because it happens differently across the system, with some system involving some places and not others. So give us a chance to think about that question.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor, perhaps you didn't hear my entire statement. I did say that we've got several months here as we proceed. And I think given the size of your request and the fiscal constraints that the legislature is under, it would be a good idea to articulate that and take the time to do so in a fashion that's credible. So I agree with you. I'm not asking for an answer today. I'm posing it for down the road.
Mr. Chair, Representative Plosky will work on that, but I do want you to see that we pose more real, and I think that's a lot of the dynamic.
Yes, McCormick, you want to continue?
Because I think it's, when we're talking about change, I heard a lot about change yesterday, this system is changing every day as we respond to the needs, and I think we need to tell that story better with some specifics, and thank you. I want to go back just to the history for some of you. The bill has merged these three existing systems, the state university system, the community college system, and the technical college system. This was legislation that passed in 1991 and became effective in 1995. Now, the merger brought three systems under one governing board and one chancellor. Before, we had three of each. Through consolidation, the number of institutions and presidents has been reduced from 45 pre-merger to 32 today. Now, that's quite a story of how we're changing and retrofitting the organization to meet the needs, and that may be a question on that. Now, the system is governed by a board of governors, appointed by the governor. And I would like to ask Trustee Bob Hoffman, chair of our board, to outline the board's role. And
Mr. Hoffman, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bob Hoffman, and I am one of 15 members of the Minnesota State College and University's Board of Trustees. The trustees are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. 12 are appointed to 6-year terms, one from each of the 8 congressional districts, and 4 at large. 3 trustees are students, a state university student, a community college student, and a technical college student, and they are appointed to 2-year terms. Our 2-year trustees have full voting rights. They have been and are tremendous contributors. Therefore, we are an effective board of 15 members. Among our major duties are primarily to hire the system's chancellor, needless to say, and that's our most important task, and also then the college and university presidents. The board also has broad policy responsibility in areas of system planning and fiscal management, personnel policy, college and university admission requirements, the setting of tuition and fees, and system policies. 3 years ago, we developed a strategic plan, and in putting it together, we received broad input from approximately 4,000 citizens who attended a series of forums around the state. The chancellor also at that time established a citizens advisory board and was co-chaired by Glenn Taylor and Vance Opperman to give us advice and input. Our strategic plan has 4 themes: increase access and opportunity. Secondly, expand high-quality learning programs and services. Thirdly, strengthen community development and economic vitality. And fourthly, fully integrate the system. Every year, the presidents and the chancellor build a work plan around these strategic themes. And we hold the chancellor accountable, and the chancellor holds the presidents accountable in their personnel evaluations for making progress towards the plan's goals. The strategic plan forms the basis for the budget request that we are presenting today. That is a quick description of the Board of Trustees for the Minnesota State College and University System. Unless there are any other questions regarding the board's role, I will turn the presentation back to the Chancellor.
Mr. Hoffman, we had a question from Representative Carlson.
Sure, Mr. Hoffman, what do you mean with the last one there, fully integrate the system?
Mr. Hoffman?
Representative Carlson, Chairman, fully integrate the system, the three systems that came together to fully integrate and become one system, one Minnesota State College and Universities. State University system, state, the community college system, and the technical college system.
Mr. Chairman, I
Representative Carlson.
That might be your answer, and just a few seconds ago, the Chancellor pointed out that the merger legislation passed in 1991. It's been 10 years. I thought you were fully integrated. Maybe I should phrase it, what remains to be done?
Mr. Hoffman.
Representative Carlson, Chairman Arnes. The process is dynamic rather than static, and it is an ongoing. Frankly, it is working very well, but needless to say, there are always opportunities to continue to do it better, and that's really what we're doing, trying to.
Representative Pawlowski.
This is a question to either one of you. On the slide where you say 45 institutions before and 32 after, does this reflect an actual closing of an institution, or what we're really looking at here, you've combined institutions, where there was a tech college and a community college, you now have one entity, or were there an institution like Waseca at the University of Minnesota that was closed?
Chancellor McCormick.
Chair Morris and Representative Kowalski. There are unique ways that we handle that across the state depending on the local circumstances. I will give you just an example to make my point. In southwest Minnesota, we have Minnesota West, one present. At an earlier time, there are five campuses, but there were five colleges, each of the present, Canby, Jackson, Pipestone, Worthington, and Granite Falls. And now we've got it integrated, 20,000 square miles, bigger than some New England states. One president coordinated, and the way we see it is we have sites, we have portals in each of those towns using the unique facilities, unique programs, but one president looking over the whole thing in terms of what we need. We've just rearranged, as Representative Dordas knows, the Northwest Tech. We've actually eliminated $750,000 in administrative overhead by closing the organization that oversaw that in Pura. And now we have integrated, I think, very successfully, Fergus Falls and Detroit Lakes and the Technical College in Moorhead and Wadena under one president serving that area. Three technical colleges, one community college, integrated, serving better, saving a lot of management, integrating then further our Grand Forks, Grand Forks with the Northland Community Technical College, one president, one combo, one technical college coming together, and our Technical College of Bemidji under the leadership of the University of Bemidji. Now those are the kinds of things that we've tried to do to look for management efficiencies, but it's more than that. The opportunity to serve using the uniqueness of each of those institutions to serve the area. And we're continuing to look for ways to make that happen even further.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, Chancellor, thank you. So the physical plan of Minsky remains basically the same. The number of buildings is more or less the same. And I bring it up. Yesterday, the governor at Rochester made an interesting proposal of a four-year university at Rochester, and I just wanted to make sure that we hadn't in some way diluted the higher education offerings at Rochester. I didn't notice it. I live close, but you know things happen. So we haven't diluted any higher ed at Rochester. Have a chance?
Representative
Castle McCormick.
We have an outstanding community and technical college in Rochester. Winona State University has been a major player on important programs, Mankato and others, as is the University of Minnesota in the upper level program. So I believe that University of Minnesota, particularly Winona, and certainly community technical colleges are working, doing their very best to serve, I believe, about 9,000 students in Washington.
We have another question from Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Councilor McCormick. I guess a question, looking at the long-range future or vision for the system, there are various comments that we perhaps have too many colleges now, that we can't pay for what we have, so perhaps we should be eliminating more. What is your vision for the future? More, less? Should we specialize more in the areas that we have? What do you think?
Councilor McCormick.
Chair Nordis and Representative Udall. The two parts to that question, I'd like to take the last part first. We are considering in very careful discussion about perhaps doing a little better job of identifying areas of excellence, outstanding programs, and so on. I think we can be a little bit more transparent in dealing with our customers about the uniqueness of each program. We've got the programs, and they're very unique, but everybody that knows about us doesn't quite see that. So we'll be doing a little bit better job of communicating. On the question of closing campuses, I've heard about that today, I think. I've looked at that very carefully. I've visited every one of these campuses. I've met with the community leaders. And I think that what we need to do is find a way to use e-learning, to use good cooperation and partnerships to serve the communities. But I would fight for a long time to keep the presence of those facilities in these little communities. And I'll just take one that comes up once in a while, and that's Canby. And I've thought a lot about that institution. It's pretty small. There's quite a distance to another campus. We have an outstanding program out there on dental assistants. They produce many of the people that serve rural Minnesota. Many of the students that go there are part-time students, older people that go and get the degrees and serve and stay in the area. We have a methanol program. We have an ethanol program at one of the other campuses out there, but we have a wind energy program emerging there. We have diesel mechanics. And I think our solution is to keep those portals, those sites in these communities, because many of them are even in our jobs program. The Jackson campus, for instance, is in the governor's jobs programs. We got an expansion on that tractor plant. I think our technical college has something to do with that. So I think the vision is to keep the facility, keep the special programs, but they can't at that size offer everything. So we will have to then permit the student to go there and be able maybe to get an e-learning course or something from another campus, because we can't have everything at those small campuses. I tell you, I was new to Minnesota 4 years ago, so I didn't come with a preconceived idea. I'm telling you, those little campuses are vital to those communities out there. And you take that little college out of International Falls, you change that whole thing. When I meet with the business people and others, I think they're important. Now, we have to keep finding ways to be more efficient, and we are. But I think you in Minnesota, you give you all the credit, your parents, your grandparents created a wonderful system of public higher education that provided affordable access and quality to the citizens. And I think we benefit enormously from that. Many of those students that get started on those little two-year colleges, I say little, not disrespectfully, they get caring support, they get started, they've had sometimes no experience with higher education, we get them started, they transfer. I mean, I could go on, and I will stop in a moment, but Wadena comes up. That's in Ken's program. I went there to the graduation this time. I've heard, why don't you close it? I just participated with Ken in the graduation. 340 people graduated. The gymnasium was filled with the parents and the families. And I had a chance to talk to almost every student because the faculty there embraced the students, each of the departments. And I had a little chance to talk with each of them. Almost everyone has a job. 330 people have jobs. A number of them are linemen. They're going to work for, they just don't work for Otter Tail. They work for Excel and the others. So these individuals, sometimes that are prepared out in those small communities, serve the Twin Cities as they need people. So I have become a great advocate of this system.
and of these campuses serving people and communities. Minnesota is a big state. It isn't 25 miles. It's 100 miles from Virginia to International Falls. In the middle of the winter, try commuting that if you're in International Falls down to Virginia. So my vision would be to serve the people of this state. We belong to the state. If we're going to turn greater Minnesota and keep it healthy, we have to be there. Look for ways to use technology to be more efficient and use the whole power of the system to bring programs to those campuses through the power of the other universities. Sorry to go so long.
Thank you very much. Interesting discussion. We're zipping by here with time, but Representative Letts, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Chancellor. I don't see how the state can pay to start a new university when the state hasn't even adequately funded our existing colleges and universities. Frankly, I've got almost 70,000 residents in the two cities I represent and a Fortune 500 company, so I'd like my own four-year university in my legislative district if it's possible. I wonder, Chancellor, if you have any amplification in your response to the governor's proposal from yesterday.
Well, I think Rochester is a very important community to serve, and I believe that Minnesota deserves some credit for having, without any the college does, for having a wonderful community technical college. I think Winona and Caleb and others have been there to serve, and I think the University of Minnesota has been there. And certainly additional funds to those institutions would make it possible to do more. But I have learned that the legislature in this state are very important to the governors, and I believe this is something to do with all of the sides.
Thank you, Chancellor. One quick question, and I don't know if you mentioned this earlier in your testimony, but how many of the students at the community colleges are using the e-learning?
No. Oh, I'm coming to that.
You're getting to that, okay.
I'm coming to that.
I will wait.
But I have to tell you, 25,000, and then I'll hit that.
We have one other question, Chancellor. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, just thinking that we did touch a little bit on the governor's presentation. I suppose we'll get a little more deeply involved later, but he also proposed long-term a voucher system for higher education, and you just gave a rather strong argument, one that I happen to concur with, relative to our smaller institutions and the opportunity that they provide. What would the voucher system that the governor proposed mean to those smaller institutions? Is that a backdoor potential closure to some of them?
Chancellor McCormick?
I mean that they're generally higher cost because they don't have the high number of students and therefore the efficiency, let's say, that a St. Cloud State or a Mankato State might have, or a Normandale in the two-year system.
Chair Ornis and Representative Carlson. That was a very good statement. You mentioned the Colorado model, and I know a little bit about that. And so I'm just not sure of the exact impact. But I'll tell you what I believe. It'll depend on what the legislature people in Minnesota believe. And I believe that the investment in our people in Minnesota, our greatest resource, is very important. And if you don't invest in the institution's capability to be able to offer the programs, I don't know how you offer them. And expensive programs in machine tool, nursing, research at the university, I think that we have a pretty good system that has been hurt quite a bit in the last 2 years with the cuts. And I think, and if the money does come to us for students, it's based on a formula of individuals. But I think you've got to keep your public institutions strong, and I have no criticism of the financial aid program that helps students go to private college and helps them, for that matter, come to some of ours. But I think you've got to keep a strong infrastructure of programs, and so I would urge us to think very carefully before, I would urge you in the broadest sense, I don't speak to the University of Minnesota, but I think you have two great systems here, and I would oppose the cutting of the base. In fact, I'm going to propose to you that we increase the base and try to get some of the money back that we've lost. So my view is a system of financial aid is here, it will be here, but to keep strong financial basic public institutions is I think the way the state ought to go.
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, you referenced and the governor referenced the Colorado model. Would you be able to have somebody on your staff perhaps provide me and maybe others that might be interested? I don't know much about the so-called Colorado model, and it might be interesting to see what he's at least referring to.
Councilor McCormick.
Yeah, Chair Norris and Representative Carlson. That was actually a topic that our board this morning, and Chair Hightower of the Finance Committee, has asked to do that. But we want to look at several models. For instance, there's been a new program out of California where the governor has recommended an investment, an increased investment in public education, and some capping of tuition, because in this case, as I read the news release, he believes that that is part of the way they help California get out of their difficult situation. So there are several models, and the Colorado, I think, just one of them. I've been asked to give information on several of these models, including California and Colorado.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Dempsey, you were going to pass?
Well, I'll pass. Well, no, I won't.
Representative Dempsey has a question.
One advantage I would think, Doctor, that the system has is quite obviously tuition, the cost of tuition. I've been over to the University of St. Thomas. I've been to some of the other private colleges, and they're talking about $35,000, $36,000, $37,000 a year to go to their school. And they're having students from Minnesota going to that school. I think just the competition alone at least seems to me that our costs in the state universities and the state technical colleges and so on is very competitive. And I have to commend you on the fact that you're not up there at 20,000. I'm sure there are some other states in the union that that's not the case. Are my thoughts in regard to that, is that valid?
Well, Chancellor McCormick.
Yes, Chair Nordis and Representative Dempsey. You have your own research staff, and I hope they'd look at it, but the numbers that I've looked at suggest that Minnesota is either the third or fourth highest tuition in the country at two-year colleges. Now, you remember, not too long ago, these were provided, and so our tuition at all of the institutions have gone up. We're not that high nationally at universities, but we're very, very high for two-year colleges. And I can tell you that our students are having a very difficult challenge. And I think tuition, by the way, is a challenge for all families and all individuals. So we tried to keep it affordable, but ours has gone up. It has gone up, so I'll say we're about that 60% in the last 2 to 4 years, 30%. So if you continue to do this, I wonder if we will really have access, affordability, and quality, which seem to be important to those principles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Mr. Chancellor McCormick, we need to continue on the testimony.
You're moving. I think I would want to say, since your governing board is the board, and by the way, one of those integration matters that we've really worked on and continue is transfer. It's much better. Still have a way to go. And we've got a number of integrated computer systems, so I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what we've done and what we still have to do, Representative Carlson. As well, but I want you to know that we have a very dedicated board. They devote substantial time to attending the meetings. They participate and visit our campuses and universities. They speak at commencements. They attend meetings with constituent groups, give presentations, and really are holding the staff and the president very accountable. I want to publicly thank these great Minnesotans for giving their time and talent to public education. To help us achieve greater efficiency and effectiveness, though, one of the problems I heard from all of you is alignment. We didn't seem to have our president pulled in, not being critical of the past, but we had our president's office of the chancellor, sometimes the board, not always planning and working together. I think that was obvious. I heard it from many. And so we came up together, that is the president and my office, with the idea of instituting a leadership council. And this includes the 32 presidents as well as my system senior staff. Now, this group has been, I think, key. And if you've heard presidents understanding and being part of things more, I think this has helped. This group is key to our efforts to maximize coordination within the system. and we're constantly looking for ways to make improvements that will serve students better and create as much efficiency as possible. And Mr. Chair, and this is important that you have the presence here, with your permission, I would like to call Presidents Wyatt and Peters to the table briefly to describe the Leadership Council. And President Wyatt this year is elected as the elected by her peers to be the co-chair, and President Peters the past chair, and Roland Barden will be next year's chair. So my two presidential colleagues come forward. We can't manage to lead this system without these presidential leaders. Ann and Tim, come on. Who goes first? Okay. Just for a minute, you may have questions of them too, because we're together as a team.
Okay, please identify yourself.
Thank you, Chancellor McCormick. Chair Nornes, members of the committee, my name is Ann Wyatt. I'm the president at Anoka Technical College, and with my colleague, President Peters, here just to share a few words with you about how your college and university presidents are working with the Board of Trustees and the Chancellor and his staff to make sure that our institutions work for our students and for our community. The Chancellor mentioned alignment, and that is key to what we do as presidents. We have organized ourselves into committees, which parallel the structure of the Office of the Chancellor and the committee structure of the Board of Trustees. We work together in those committees, presidents of state universities, community colleges, consolidated colleges, and technical colleges, to develop policy and program options for our board to consider, and we believe in that way we give the board more informed choices, better and more thoughtful options and ways to advance our system for our students and our communities. And this is all about advancement of the strategic plan that the Chancellor has talked about and Chair Hoffman. And some examples of how we work together to advance that plan: Minnesota Online, which you've heard a bit about, we'll hear more about, our diversity initiatives in our colleges and universities to better serve our newest Minnesotans, accountability, and most recently, and the Chancellor alluded to this, our work as presidents to define the attributes of distinctive colleges and universities, to take that notion of centers of excellence and give that flesh and bones and to talk about what that means for our students and our communities. This allows us to bring a crucial local perspective to the work at the state of Minnesota. It allows us to bring Anoka, to bring Winona, to bring Canby into discussions in St. Paul, and it also allows us as institutional leaders to collectively explore topics of efficiency and better service to our state. And I believe President Peters is going to address that point very briefly for you.
President Peters, welcome.
Chair Nornes, members of the committee, I'm Ken Peters, president of Minnesota State Community and Technical College. We're a two-year-old institution with a 40-year history, combining Fergus Wells Community College and Wadena, Detroit Lakes, and Moorhead. Thank you for the opportunity to speak briefly on some of the benefits that have accrued to students, to our institutions, to our communities, and to the mainstream system through the advisory role that the Leadership Council provides to the Chancellor. Each of us, while leading institutions with unique missions, are working together in a commitment to the broader ministry. Speaking from my experience in the Northwest, the reorganization of the two-year institutions, the partnerships that have developed, for example, between MSCTC and Minnesota State University Moorhead, have benefited students and taxpayers. In the new two-year college that I have the privilege of leading, administrative costs have been reduced from a ratio of one excluded administrator per 190 FYE students to one per 230 as a direct result of the reorganization. The collaborations that have resulted from institutions working together have resulted in better educational services. Minnesota State University, Moorhead, and MSCTC have created a seamless transfer experience for nursing, combining five different programs where students may start in a long-term nursing assistant program at the college, move on through the practical nursing program, through the two-year ADN program, associate degree nursing program for registered nurses at the college, and then if they choose, transfer into the completion program at MSUM and receive a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing. And if they choose, move on to a master's degree program at the Tri-College in the Fargo-Moorhead area. All of these transfers taking place without the student losing a credit. Six institutions in the Northwest, my institution, Alexandria Tech, MSUM, Bemidji State University, Northwest Tech Bemidji, and Northland Community and Technical College are partnering in delivering student services and IT support to our students taking distance education, avoiding duplication and providing students with a single site for answers to their questions. We are working as a system, we are working as partners, and all around the state there exist examples of these kinds of efforts as a result of our commitment to our institution's mission and to our work together through the Leadership Council. Thank you for this opportunity. If you have any questions.
Representative Abar.
A question for President Wyatt. Nice to have you here. She represents the college in my district and does a wonderful job up there. Just that I'm glad you can have this leadership council. And just a simple question. As you do alignment and focus on courses and stuff, is that do the presidents bring ideas or does the staff bring ideas or is it just kind of a big pot and ideas come out of your meetings as you would decide what programs to add and close?
That's why.
Yes. Program development, our system at the Chancellor's Institute is very dynamic, and ideas come from many, many sources, and the presidents have a voice in that, and I think a critical voice in looking at how our programs can respond to the marketplace demands of our community. So yes, we hear from all over, and particularly at our institution, as you know, keep us very close with the voice of the business community.
Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes or no, Doctor, did you at one time say some of your instructors and so on give the commencement address at some of the schools and the technical colleges and so on?
Dr. Peters, is that who you're addressing?
No,
the
no.
For McCormick?
Yeah, Dr.
Okay,
McCormick.
Chancellor McCormick.
Yes,
does that occur?
Well, commencement speeches, yeah. That's completely in the hands of the presidents and their students and faculty to decide who the commencement speakers are.
But some of them are the instructors, is that correct?
Yes, I'm sure that's
true. Yes. Yeah, so, well, can I just tell a little story? That
are you volunteering?
No.
Representative Dempsey.
I have to tell you a little story that happened. In my particular case, I was selected by... Well, I was teaching school in Hastings, and I was selected by the senior class to give the commencement address. And that had never happened before. They usually had someone from the tech college or somebody from the University of Minnesota. And so I came home, and I told my wife, and I told my daughter, Katie, and I was talking to her, and I said, Katie, what do you think I should talk about? I'm supposed to give the commencement address here at the high school, 420 kids. What do you think I should talk about? She all thought a little while, and she said, Dad, why don't you talk about 5 minutes and sit down? I asked many questions, and hopefully the answers aren't even 5 minutes long, so I can understand.
Thank you, Representative Dempsey. Any other questions or comments?
Chancellor McCormick. I just want to say that I was very privileged to be invited to be the new coach of this organization. I have a wonderful presence. Didn't all work out. A great majority, great people, great staff, and it's been wonderful to have them on the team to help lead the system. So I thank them publicly, and they'll be very close to all of you so that we don't lose sight of what we need to do. Thank you.
We want to thank them for coming today, too.
Thank you. I mean, we want to get Mr. Chair into the detail. Before I do, I'd like to ask Trustee Clarence Hightower, who is Chair of the Board's Finance and Facilities Committee, to describe the process that we get to in terms of this request that we bring to you today.
Clarence Hightower, would you identify yourself to the tape, please?
Thank you, Chancellor. Chair, members, my name is Clarence Hightower, and I'm a member of the Board of Trustees and also Chair of the Finance and Facilities Committee. And let me just say, as I thought about what word I would use to describe the process, the word I would use is inclusive. This has been a very inclusive process, one that started over a year ago with the formation of a stakeholders group. That stakeholders group included students, faculty, and staff. They met on a monthly basis and made recommendations to the chancellor. Based on those recommendations and feedback, the chancellor produced a preliminary budget, and that preliminary budget was discussed by the leadership council in June and in July. The board of trustees saw the preliminary budget in September. We then embarked on two public hearings. One of our public hearings was in September in Mankato. Another one was in October in Brooklyn Park. both of the public hearings had full turnout, and we had some very constructive input from those that were in the public hearings. We took that input and the preliminary budget, brought it back to the board in October, and then the board of trustees adopted the budget in October. That's the process that we use because it's very inclusive, and Mr. Chair, if there's no other questions, or if there's questions, I will stand for those questions.
Anyone have any questions of Mr. Hightower? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Hightower, the doctor?
No,
Mister. Okay.
Southwest State.
I am.
That's almost.
Almost. Almost to St. Cloud State, but. Just wondering, the general breakdown of your increased expenses. I mean, how do you spend it? What caused the increases,
Mr. Hightower?
Chair, we're going to have that in just a second.
Okay.
And so, rather than jump the gun on that, we're going to walk you through all those details in just a second.
All right. Good.
Chancellor McCormick? Yeah, thank you. I
want to get right to the presentation of the numbers. The budget that we're presenting today for an increase of $66.5 million, and it represents, we think, a balanced approach to financing higher education. It asks the legislature and the citizens of Minnesota to invest in students. It asks students to continue to invest in their own education, and it anticipates reallocating more than $50 million existing resources. Priorities grounded in the strategic plan that both of our board members described. And I'd like now to turn the presentation over to Vice Chancellor Laura King, who will present the details of our request. And I want you to know that I intend to stay for any questions and so on that you might have. So, Laura.
Ms. King, you may proceed.
We're out of camera right here. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. As I said a bit earlier, my name is Laura King. I'm the Vice Chancellor of Finance for the University of College and University. I'm delighted to be here today with the Chancellor and the Chair of our Board and the Chair of our Finance Committee to present to you our budget request, outline to you how we arrived at it, have a chance for you to ask us some questions about it, and get the process that we're in the class field we're familiar rolling. I know it's January, but I looked at a lot of opportunities to talk with you about what's been happening in our college and universities and how we arrived at this budget request. And I'd like to start with some background. I see our driver is keeping up with me. The chart that you see over my shoulder illustrates our total state appropriation from fiscal 1999 to fiscal 2005. This is a period when we had 30,000 new FYEs. And you can see between 99 and 2005, our state appropriation is essentially level, $550 million and $546 million, at the same time that our FYE enrollment went from 107,000 to 137,000. This is a striking chart in my mind. If we were to roll the clock back and not have taken the reductions that we took in the last biennium, in the last budget process, just for reference purposes, the 2004 bar would be $650 million, and the 2005 bar would be $640 million. That's an illustration for you, I think, of how severe the reductions were that our colleges and universities absorbed coming into this biennial budget process. Another way to think about it is that if you look at the state's general fund budget from 2000 to 2005, the state general fund budget went up 23%. The budget, the portion of the budget that was reserved for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities went down. Went down both in dollars and in percentage.
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. King, this is... I'm sorry, Ms. King. You know, this is one of my pet peeves, and that is that there are some areas of the budget that grow faster than other areas of the budget, and to those who want to make the point that, gee, the state budget increased 23% and we didn't increase 23%. I really think it's incumbent upon people who make that assertion to point out the areas of the budget that grew more than 23% and point out the cuts that ought to have been made in those other parts of the budget. If the point is that perhaps additional resources ought to be made to the state university system, I know that I and other members of the committee are open to that. But simply to take a static look, and I've seen this in editorial pages, and I've seen this analysis over and over again, not only by higher education advocates, but by others, that, well, the budget increased X percent, and we increased less than that, and gee, aren't we being treated poorly? I really think that that's a false argument. I think your other argument is stronger, Ms. King.
Mr. Chairman, I think if you were to ask the staff, I have made your speech repeatedly, and I meant not to assert that. I meant simply to observe it, that while the state has been struggling with its budget balancing, and state general fund spending has increased, spending on higher education has not. That was the only observation I meant to make. I have absolutely made your speech. I think it's an argument without merit to line up percentages and draw a conclusion from it. So we're together on that.
Ms. King, continue.
If you look at setting aside state appropriation now and look at the combination of closing and state appropriation, the chart over my shoulder illustrates the combination of forces at work. It starts in fiscal 1999. And indicates that at that point we had $7,385 in revenue per FYE. And that's a combination of tuition and state appropriation. Over the next 6 years, in actual dollars, that amount grew about 1% a year, from $7,385 to $7,792. In inflation-adjusted dollars, that amount declined about 8%. Or about 1.5% a year. So even though, and you'll see some more from me about this, even though you've been reading about tuition increases and they have been extreme, they have not resulted in extraordinary increases in revenue available to us because they have come in behind state appropriation. And that's an important understanding. I think the students have been with us on that point from the very beginning. It's recognized that we're not growing our budget by a factor of 40% because we're raising tuition. We're simply staying about even in revenues available per FYE. In order to do that, we have pursued a tremendous number of efficiencies over the last 4 years, really. As you know, we participate with the Department of Employee Relations in labor negotiations. And we have settled our faculty contracts, which are the contracts that we negotiate and then bring to the legislature. In line with the averages that the Department of Employee Relations put forth for statewide contracts, or about a 1.7% increase over the biennial. Our colleges and universities have a history of reallocating resources to the point raised earlier of closing programs in order to generate a capacity in their budgets to start new programs. And that's contributed about $40 million over the past 2 years to their flexibility in targeting resources. We've initiated web-based services. Just this past year, we had over 40,000 students that were using online bill paying that enabled us to save over 2,000 hours of staff time and tremendously improve the flexibility and responsiveness of our business operations to student schedules. And then we've had reductions in staff. Every year the staff count varies depending upon program demand and individual institutions. From 2002 to 2003, we had a reduction of 700 in our head count on payroll. All those are illustrations of steps that have been taken in order to increase enrollment by $30,000, 30,000 employees, 30,000 students at the same time that our revenues from state appropriation and tuition have been essentially flat. The chart that you see next is a little confusing, so let me take a second to illustrate it. Part of my interest here really is to make sure that we do what we can to convey what's been going on with tuition as we go into this session's discussion. This chart shows the combined effects of state appropriation reductions and tuition increases. And you can see that it's almost lockstep. We have used tuition, frankly, to help us hold up services that were supported by state appropriation in prior periods. And what this chart shows you is tuition revenue has yielded up almost as much as we have lost in state appropriation. If you add up all these bars, you get a little bit deeper loss on the state appropriation side than a gain on the tuition side. But we have used tuition to replace state appropriation, not entirely, but to a large extent. And that's what leads to this next chart, and I believe it was brought up earlier in our conversation. It has been a historical tenet that the state would pay for two-thirds of public higher education, and tuition would pay for one-third. And when we prepare a report for you every legislative session on our instructional spending, that relationship is holding pretty well, if we look just at the academic and instructional spending. But if we look at all of the spending in the building that goes into delivering a college education, what we see is that the combination of tuition increases and state appropriation reductions have moved this relationship almost to 50-50 on a system average. And at the individual university level, particularly, these lines have crossed. At the college level, they haven't crossed yet, but they're going to cross in the next 3 to 4 years. We will find ourselves in situations where, on a building-by-building basis, we might find two-thirds of the revenue supporting that operation is tuition and fee revenue, and only one-third is state appropriation revenue. And that is a real break from the historical pattern in public higher education in Minnesota. Let me talk for just a second, if I might, Mr. Chair, about the enrollment adjustment before we talk about the governor's budget request. You'll see in the governor's budget documents an expression of the statutory obligation that exists today that each public post-secondary system's instructional service base shall be adjusted for estimated changes in enrollments. And if the actual enrollment differs from the estimate, then settle-up adjustment is made in the following biennium. What these words mean is that our presidents have been acting with the expectation that the enrollment adjustment, which has been in law since 1995, would be honored this legislative session, both by the governor and by this body. In the event that our enrollment goes down, the process takes money away from us. We recognize that. We never called it a cut. We don't fuss about it. The staff work out what the arithmetic is. And likewise, it would be our expectation, as our enrollment increases, that our base budget would be adjusted to recognize the students that we served starting in fiscal 2001 and that we are still serving today. Our students view this as a promise. Our presidents and board certainly view it as a promise. We've made commitments and made program decisions on the expectation that this portion of the law would be honored. And so I just am here to say to you today that we won't talk any more about this unless there are questions, but we wanted you to understand that from where we sit, this is a very important promise between state law and the president and the administrators and the students that are present throughout our system. The effect of rapid enrollment growth in the absence of the enrollment adjustments has been stark. We've talked a little bit about tuition already. State resources per FYE have declined 22% in the same time period. And we have been faced with taking all steps possible to drive money into the classroom to support instructors and faculty, to support the students, and take money from wherever we can get it, frankly, to support that. We've seen shrinkage in technology budgets. We've seen shrinkage in building repair budgets. We know instructional equipment is getting obsolete or past obsolete. We scramble around every year to find very limited resources for new program development. And we know that student support is lagging today, and we're very concerned about it as we move into the next generation of Minnesota higher education students. We've seen reduced library hours. We've seen buildings closing during the week. I hope none of you have had that occasion to drive up to one of your local campuses and find the doors locked, but we know it's happening as a means of keeping operating budgets as tight as possible. And we know that we've enrolled these students with an expectation of service, and we look forward to the enrollment adjustment recognizing that expectation. Moving on to the state appropriation request, you have before you a request that the Chancellor mentioned is a three-way partnership. We are proposing that our students support yet another tuition increase of 4% a year, which would yield about $62 million, that our college and universities would once again work towards reallocations and identify resources to move from lower priorities to higher priorities activities, and that you, as part of that partnership, would support a 5% increase in our state appropriation request over the biennium, or $66.5 million. So 4% on tuition, a similar percentage on reallocations, and a 5% state appropriation increase. The state appropriation increase is about a 4% a year increase compounded. In keeping with the instructions that the Department of Finance sent out to state agency participants, with this partnership, we would look to tuition and reallocations to pay for inflation at our colleges and universities. There is nothing in the budget request for new resources that would cover compensation or operating cost inflation. We would look to tuition and reallocations to do that. We would hope to target whatever state resources you're able to support for us to the highest priority initiatives that we've heard from you, that we've heard from our board, and that we've heard from the governor. I'll walk you through those and welcome a dialogue about them. We think this request, we know this request is the lowest in our history, and we also know it's vital to our ability to respond to the objectives that we have in statute for our pardon me one second. We believe our proposal is a balance between services for right now and services for the students that are coming to us in the days and years ahead. We also recognize that we must continually change in order to stay competitive. And you'll see on the slide there we have six initiatives, which we hope we target programs appropriately. We intend to use them to broaden services to new communities and to leverage what we are finding to be more and more extraordinary power of technology to help us extend the reach and the breadth of the services that we offer. I'll walk through these, Mr. Chair, one slide at a time quickly, but hopefully with enough detail for members to get a flavor. And you can also find much of what I have here in the materials that were left with you in the folder. The first initiative is titled Critical State Needs, and it has three elements. It concerns nursing, which we've heard about here today. We would seek $10 million to support a proposal that would enable us to expand our capacity to educate by 440 nurses at the end of this biennium. Access to bachelor's degrees, to expand practical nursing access, to aid in our recruitment of nursing faculty, which is a real critical choke point in this whole stream, and to do so the demands across Minnesota. Like many states, we're facing a severe shortage of nurses and a shortage of licensed practical nurses.
Ms. King, we have a question from Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chair Norris. Ms. King, in K-12 education, I believe that about 80-85% of their budgets are on staff salaries. Is that similar to what is in the college system? And also, regarding nursing, is one of the problems with your instruction, do you have a high turnover, or are they just not enough coming into the field as instructors of nursing, or What is the problem there?
Ms. King.
Mr. Chair, Representative, to your last question first, the two largest challenges in the nursing area are instructors and clinical sites. Finding enough infrastructure to provide the training in a clinical setting is a challenge across the state. And we do a lot of with private hospitals and private colleges for those sites. Finding instructors is similarly a difficult challenge, both because of their educational requirements and because it might take them out of service. They might prefer to be a nurse over being an instructor.
They could make more money as nurses.
Those are the two largest. The largest challenges in the initiative. We think we've constructed solutions to both of those challenges, but we recognize them as present. To your first question, our operating budget, on average now across the system, and these are very large numbers, so this is a big average, but on average our budget is about 65% to 68% compensation, the balance for everything else. It varies quite a bit. By some institutions are up over 80, and some are down in the low to mid 60s.
Thank you.
Members, we need to conclude in about 10 minutes. So, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to put the numbers together here, and if I understood you correctly, Ms. King, you indicated that you wanted to be able to increase the output of RNs by 440. You need to recruit 40 nursing faculty, and I assume that's what's going to help you produce the 440. And you're going to offer, I see on page 4, a $10,000 tuition forgiveness program for those willing to teach at a state, you know, so they can earn their advanced degree. But I'm interested in the timing of that. Can you gear up that rapidly where you're going to be able to recruit and get educated with an advanced degree, those 40 nurses, so you're going to have an output of 440 by the end of the biennium? I'm just thinking of how long it takes to earn a master's degree or a doctorate, and assuming that these are nurses in the field, many of them probably wouldn't necessarily be full-time students. But if you could answer that question of how the timing comes together.
Could you please identify yourself?
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, I think you're right to say that's an ambitious goal, but I think the reason that we think that it's achievable is that despite the fact that we haven't had a lot of additional resources, both in our office, in the system office, as well as on the campuses, we have been working to reduce the gap in the need for nurses. So we've got sort of a head start on this. It's not as fast as we'd like, and this money certainly would help us to go faster. But we do believe that because of some of the things we've done to increase the pipeline, it is a doable goal. Now, in terms of the faculty, I think that the idea there is not so much that all of those faculty will be growing from the very beginning point, but there might be people that are already in the pipeline that are thinking of practicing nurses that with some incentives might choose to go on and get their master's. They might already be to have a bachelor's degree and get a master's degree and be ready to teach in a fairly short period of time. So if you'd like more information, we certainly can provide that, but we work pretty carefully on trying to not overpromise what we do. We think this is a stretch for the individual.
I don't know if I need any more information. I think you commented that my assumption was that it was pretty ambitious as well. And good luck.
Ms. King, I have to apologize. We have more time. We have till 2:15. This is our first full committee meeting, and we're learning. So I don't want to leave prematurely.
I knew for sure I couldn't do it in 10 minutes.
We do have another question from Representative Mariano.
Mr. Chair, my question was that question, but I would have said too that my understanding is that in the teaching and instruction level in nursing, that one of the issues that that all systems are facing is that the instructors are older instructors, and so you really don't have a big window of time to turn around construction issue because you got a bunch of people are getting ready to retire inside of, I don't know, 5 or 10 years here.
Ms. King?
Mr. Chair, wasn't it very high? That's a challenge for us across the classrooms. Mm. It's not even particularly limited to the allied health fields. It's the demographics of the country, really. Mm. If I might then take us to the teacher education proposal. We have established what we're calling a teaching center at the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. The goal of this center is to advance opportunities for growth and development of educators throughout the state and throughout their careers, using both face-to-face and online programs and services. It will also provide quick response services to both the current students and the school districts that we partner with. We would, in this initiative, continue development of the partnerships we already have in place with our lower division partners, which is P-12, and that indicates pre-kindergarten to 12th grade. We would use this initiative to meet particular needs in critical areas like math and science, which has been talked about recently. That is a targeted area for us to aid in teacher development. We would use it to design alternative pathways and some accelerated pathways in order to speed the movement of trained teachers into the classroom. And we would use it to provide a web-based clearinghouse for both teaching materials, networking materials, and training materials. This has been a very high priority for us. We have managed to do some very modest reallocations in order to start this center out. We've got great enthusiasm for it across our state universities and are partnering with the state universities to get it started. And we think it's a piece of a strategy to address the challenges that we've all read about in both the K-12 system and the transition from K-12 to higher ed. The final piece of this initiative is the farm and small business management program. And this is really an umbrella of programs that includes farm and small business management, small business management, computerized small business, land and wool management, and specialty crop management. For members from outstate Minnesota or rural Minnesota, you probably have great familiarity with this program. It's been a tremendously successful, long-running program of service primarily to the rural community. What we would propose to do with this initiative are a variety of targets. One of them is to expand the diversity of the populations that are served, to increase our ability to provide student support, to provide tuition relief, for members who recall a long time ago when we had line item appropriations, there was an appropriation to the Small Business Management Program for tuition buy-down. We have kept that in place internally, even though it's no longer required in statute or in session law. And we would expand that provision with this portion of this initiative. And we would use the balance of it to aid in capacity building and collaboration with other parts of our system and other parts of the infrastructure in outstate Minnesota. This is a request for $3 million, and it comes from a very large, extensive consultation process in the farm and small business management community around Minnesota. The next initiative for us is the Minnesota Online Program. We are seeking your assistance in what has been an explosively successful program in the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities in the past 5 years. This is the program that the Chancellor alluded to, one of the few in the country where we have accreditation authority here in Minnesota. We are adding programs and courses and services to this technology every day. Tremendously popular and part of a much larger network, both with the University of Minnesota and other parts of state government. We're seeking your support here with an $8 million request that will enable us to expand tutoring and training services, expand the call center, enhance the technical support that's provided both to our users and to students, help us in creating additional online programs, develop increased services to corporate clients, and again promote collaboration across all grades. We're particularly excited about the potential for this technology in our services to business industry because there is great familiarity with desktop training, with computer training, and great opportunity there for partnerships. The third initiative is our outreach to underserved. This initiative is designed to address the problems of students who have traditionally been underrepresented in higher education, including low-income, first-generation students of color, by taking a multi-level, multi-faceted approach to improving the academic achievement potential and the college-going motivation of these students. We all know demographics in Minnesota. They're changing significantly. If you look at the percentage of minority public school students in Minnesota, it's doubled in the past 14 years. Just as a couple of illustrations, between 1999 and 2003, the number of students of color enrolled in adult American schools increased by 220%. In Eden Prairie schools, they increased by over 300%. Owatonna schools by over 400%. Worthington schools by over 500%. The change is happening all across the state, and we're very interested in getting out there and helping new students succeed. We know that they are lagging achievement at the K-12 level, with a test score gaps of 20% or worse in some cases. It's considerably worse for Hispanic and Black students. We're very interested with this initiative in undertaking efforts to improve that accomplishment and to improve their success rates in college. It's our hope to model this after the TRIO program, which has been a very successful federally funded program over the last several decades now, which is designed to motivate and support students at the lower grade level as well as the high school level, really with a goal toward getting them in a successful posture before they finish high school, so that when they finish high school, they view college as an achievement and a doable achievement on their part. We're asking for $12 million for this initiative, and we're hoping that you're able to support it.
Mr. Chair?
This is a key constituency for us to serve in the future.
Representative Abler,
is there time for questions?
We can take a moment for a question.
I think this is a great idea, and there's all kinds of challenges with the, you know, in the other education committee, we've talked about the challenges coming out of high school and graduating and all that business. But what is this buy in terms of hardware or people, or what are you going to, I mean, I understand what you're going to, what the goals are.
This is almost entirely people. This is training, this is mentoring, this is putting teams together to work with groups of students. This is a high-touch program.
Well, it's a recruiter program, right? Is that what they were?
I'm sorry.
Would they go out to the different...
That's part of it.
Distance.
Right.
Thank you.
Ms. King, continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The fourth initiative, and I'm round at the bend here, I'm getting to the finish line, is the Innovation Fund. This is what we think of as the seed money to help us... provide incentives to continue the change that's been started since the merger and get a bit of a hiccup the last couple of years with the resource difficulty. We think that it's critical for us to remain competitive as the primary source of post-secondary education in Minnesota. To reduce the time to delivery for new programs, assist us in identifying rapidly changing requirements and providing seed funds that would trigger a match in local business communities and in local college and university communities with our partner organizations and industries. We would use this initiative's fund to provide resources for development and design of new programs and curriculum, to focus it particularly on the state's critical economic and workforce development needs, and to decrease the time to market for new programs and to market for new curriculum. This is a request, Mr. Chair, for $5 million, and it would be used to provide assistance to the colleges and universities to improve their services in that area. The fifth of six initiatives is a request for the Parent Replacement Fund. This is a sort of an old song, I think, for most members. Like every other public entity in the country, we have a severe backlog of deferred maintenance. We have been trying to push operating budget investments up to work that backlog down. It's a very difficult struggle for us when we're facing the kind of enrollment increases that we've experienced the last couple of years to fund instruction and academic support and deferred maintenance. We've been in front of you before with this request. We're here again today with a request for $11 million of the biennium to help us with the keep-up portion of our operating budget. We know in looking at how budgets have been spent the last couple of years that this area certainly hasn't seen an increased investment, and we're concerned that it's seen a disinvestment. Which just translates into higher capital costs and higher budget impacts. Chancellor mentioned a few things that have gone wrong for us the last couple of years, and we would hope that you can help us with that by supporting this request. The final initiative is titled Competitive Salaries. It is our goal here, with your help, to create a resource for us to bring the competitive salary position in both the academic and staff profiles up, to improve it, to do it in a way that encourages excellence for both our faculty and staff. We would focus this on high demand academic disciplines, and we would use it to encourage particular actions and outcomes. This approach certainly carries the potential for more salary differentials in faculty and staff compensation improvements than has typically been the case, but we would also recognize that it's all subject to the collective bargaining process. What we hope to do here is find a new way with a very modest amount of money to use the collective bargaining process to look for outcomes that are targeted and highest priority. So we have a request here with you for $13.9 million. That brings me to the end of the script, Mr. Chair. Let me just, if I might, summarize what we think we'll be able to provide you in exchange for your support of $66.5 million in new state assistance. We certainly will provide you with more nurses. We'll provide better prepared teachers, which translates into more successful students. We'll strengthen the rural development that we've invested in as a state for many, many years. We'll provide increased access to courses and programs for underserved populations, increased access through online services, further innovation in the rapidly changing world around us, safer, more efficient facilities, and enhanced competitiveness. Thank you very much for your patience sitting through this. The Chancellor and I both would be very glad to answer any questions you might have.
We have a couple of questions. Maybe the Chancellor wants to come back to the table in case it's for him. Representative Pulaski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chancellor King or Chancellor McCormick, I'm looking at your calculating the cost. I've set my arrow to zero. So let's assume for a second you did not get this amount of money. And I'm looking at a tuition impact of 8.2%, and then the costs are there. I assume that's all correct. So I would like this question answered. If you didn't get this money, you'd still move forward with these projects. You just pay for it with tuition. Is that correct, or how does this chart work?
Let me convey to you what our board has said. Our board has said, as I outlined, that with the state support, they would promise no more than a 4% tuition increase in order to create the resources to target these initiatives. They have not said, without the state support, we're going to raise tuition any number. What this chart illustrates to you is that if you want us to do the things that we've outlined here, if you agree with us that they're the state's priorities, and you're not able to fund it, if we were to approach funding it with tuition, this is the tuition increase that would be required.
Mr. Chair, that's what I was hoping.
Okay, Councilman McCormick, this is a very handy tool.
Well, Mr. Chair, I want you to know I've been here before and we got into this, so we thought we'd be ready.
Representative Carlson?
Now, I'm looking at slide 31 in this question of Ms. King.
This is the Farm and Small Business Management, and on your list here you have increased collaboration. Who is that with, or what do you mean by increased collaboration? And the reason I raised the question, I know the University of Minnesota through Extension has some very similar programs that you have as well, and they have some on-campus programs as well, like at Crookston and what have you. Is that who you're talking about with collaboration, or are you talking your own internal programs?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Carlson, my understanding of this is that it's a fairly modest request on the part of the program managers. This is $300,000 of this overall initiative. And their target really is more at the local community level, either through their own college or university affiliate. Many of these instructors, all the instructors are affiliated with one college, and part of what they want to do with this program is see if there's strength in their own ranks that they could bring to bear on a broader basis. And maybe it's regionalizing. If they've got one instructor that's really the genius on some software for the Land of Wolf program, finding a way to expand the benefit of that.
So, Mr. Chairman, the short of it is that it's internal. You weren't talking across systems, but you're talking internal.
Okay, that's all I was interested in. Thank you.
Representative Cox.
Representative Pulaski asked my question. Thank you.
Oh, Representative Pulaski has another question.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor or Chancellor, how does this reflect what the individual campus would do with tuition? There's been flexibility given to campus by campus, so can you tell me what the trustees would do? Let's say I'm going to set you back at zero. What would you then allow campus by campus for tuition above your 4.whatever%?
Ms. King.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, that's the question the board has in front of us. There has been no, the board's taken no action to say this 4% is everybody at 4% or average of 4%. They have not made commitment to that. We would go into that as we got further into the spring and had a sense of where we were going. I think the board sort of balances two constraints. On the one hand, they're concerned about the overall average increase. And so we talk about limiting the overall average to a number. On the other hand, they're very sensitive to the local market conditions. Both on the upside and the downside. There are some schools in some regions of the state that just can't raise tuition because they've got very near competitors or they've got a particular student body profile that's just hits the capacity. There are other schools that have the ability, and so the board struggles with those two constraints. And we will take this conversation to them in the spring, and as we meet in on a number, give them some advice about it.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, I don't need an answer now, but again, this goes to our continuing discussion. If you get zero, and that's a probability, there are concerns that aren't just yours on this sheet. Nursing is one, where we have an extremely high demand, and we cannot meet that demand. So, at some point, Minsky or these individual campuses, they're going to have to tell us how they're going to meet that demand if we do not give them the resources. And I'm pointing toward tuition or some mechanism. But when you've got 130 on one campus alone waiting to get in, and you've got a 3,000 nurse shortage pending, somewhere that's going to have to be met. So, and I'm not pointing a finger and blaming. I just want to know how it's going to be met over the next 2 years if we do not give you the resources. And, in fact, this chart's sort of neat because you can go down to negative, too.
That's right.
We can start playing with, if you don't get your enrollment match, we can go that way also with it.
Mr. Shepard, the policy, I understand your question. The other observation I'd make is that there's a third choice here, and that is that we start turning away students. And we're already there.
Well, in some Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor, you're doing that now. We're turning them away by the hundreds. So if we are going to do what this state now has targeted as a need, not a want, a need. How are you, as a system, and these individual campuses, going to meet that need? And I don't want an answer today, but over the course of the next few months, we better get an answer.
We have another question from Representative Opex.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, either to Ms. King or Chancellor McCormick. And I think this is along the same lines. You began your presentation with making the presumption about an adjusted base, that this is what the law says, this is where we need to be. And so I think maybe it's along the same lines as Representative Pawlowski, that what happens if that base isn't adjusted to, and the $66 million is provided. Do your priorities change then, or do that $66 million then have to be thought of in some other way, given that the base wasn't adjusted either entirely or perhaps even entirely? Then do those priorities change, or do you stick with them? How do you wrestle with that?
Representative Opatz, Mr. Chair, that's an eventuality that, frankly, I haven't even thought about. Because the board has said that enrollment adjustments are number one priority. So under some theory, if there would be an appropriations increase that was not tagged, it was dollars, we would view that, I think, as enrollment adjustment dollars. If there was an interest in providing us resources and then saying to us, but we have to spend it this way, then I think we'd have a very difficult conversation about the possibility of doing that, of not recognizing enrollment, but starting new initiatives.
So, Mr. Chair, in a sense, then, are you saying that this discussion about the priorities and the investments that you'd like to make are really about an appropriation in excess of $180 million over the current base? And so until we get to that $180 million, this is really a kind of a moot point.
Until we get to 130.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had the wrong. I misspoke.
That's our view. That enrollment adjustment brings the presence up to the starting line.
Just to see if I can state that clearly with our board here. So, Boss Hoffman, if you want to come up and have another view, you have that right. If the chair allows it. I think we came to an agreement, believing that we would. Believing that the adjustment enrollment is very important, and that's been our pattern. We lost money on that earlier. We've taken students, requesting the $66 million, and telling our students and our constituents that if we got that, we would pledge not to go above 4%, and I think that's an average of the system. And I think if any of that comes apart, which it indeed could, then I think we have to go back with our best thinking, our consultation with the board, and come back to you at that point and decide how we're going to handle this. But we've tried to put that together, the balance, the tuition, the new money to do these important new things for Minnesota, and trying to accommodate. And there are those who said we should be coming back and asking for $191 million. We didn't do that. We tried to work within the constraints and the challenge and tried to come up with something where we could keep things going and also do some of these new things. Not new in the sense, but things we're hearing about. By new, I mean more nurses. So I think we go back, and I think that's the board's role with advice and consultation, and certainly consultation with you. Is that fair, Chair Hoffman? Yes, sir.
We have used up our committee time, but we'll take one more question. Representative Mariana, if you want to ask your question.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. First one is for you. And that is, we covered a lot of ground. Is it the chair's expectation in the course of future meetings that we'll go back into detail on some of these?
That's correct.
Yeah, and I think that's good because I know that even just talking about the strategic priorities, there's a lot of ground for us to cover here, and I have some experience working with the system in my other hat in terms of some of the issues about the underserved. I think you've got some creative ideas here that the committee would benefit from hearing. But my question, I guess, for you, Mr. Chancellor, has to do with the strategic priorities then. And that is, has the Leadership Council perhaps thought about, in terms of this 1 through 6, If we came in short of that total request, is there a priority list here, or would it be the intent of the system to spread the dollars out across all of them and do pieces of them? Are there some of these that jump out more in terms of urgency for the well-being of the system than others?
Councilor McCormick.
We're in that continuous process of discussing, but I'm a believer, to give you a general answer, that we probably shouldn't do 4% or cuts. I think that people that care and have knowledge ought to be thinking about what's more important than others. So I would like to have a discussion, given the circumstances, as many of you. And of course, that circumstance is always there of limiting enrollment, which in a sense we're doing now. And I just urge you to. I would resist that one because I think we are the point of access. But those are the things that we have to talk about. But I don't think everything is the same. But we will talk about that and come back and work on it.
Thank you.
We want to.
Just one more question. I'm
okay,
sorry.
Representative.
I don't want an answer, but the next time they're up, I'd like an answer.
Okay.
The first question would be, what harm has happened at the system level as a result of the base cuts of 2003? And by system, I mean at the Minsky Central Office. The second one would be, I would like the system's position on fencing off dollars. And I think if that might come next Tuesday, and it might come with bills before this committee. So I would like your position on, if we have legislation or proposals to fence, are you going to start calling that new money, and do I have to get out George Orwell and be able to decipher it, or how are we going to deal with fencing? And I don't mean with swords or...
Well, I want to thank you for, Chancellor, for presenting your budget and information. Our new members appreciate that, and all of us do. So with that, our meeting is adjourned.